Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hey everybody, welcome to Ruined. This is Hallie.
This is Allison.
And this is a podcast. Oh boy, off to a great start. This is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie for you.
Yeah. So if you don't want to see a horror movie because you're too scared, this is the place for you.
And we usually kick off with the first horror movie, which is Allison not knowing who she is, forgetting her own name.
Who I am. Yeah. Just crisis of identity every time we record. So that's fun for me internally.
We wanted to kick things off with a fan question, yes, as we've been doing recently. Do you guys like this? I don't know. Let us know. We like hearing you and reading your questions. So
yeah, you guys send us really good questions, including this one from Cat Eye, a friend of the pod / sound engineer. Cat, I don't know what your job title is.
No, I think you got it right.
But I love you. Cat asked us a very good question, which is, what character would you be in a horror movie? And would you be the monster / slasher? Slasher.
That's super
which I think
fun.
Is great because it does not assume that we would be innocent.
Oh, absolutely.
Which no one should.
What are your thoughts?
I'm tempted. I have sided with some of the villains in some of these movies, most notably Brahms.
Right. You were a very strong pro Brahms proponent.
Really wanted to make. I saw where Brahms was. I felt bad for Brahms.
I did too. Brahms is an indictment of parenting, if nothing else.
Absolutely. I don't know if I would be Brahms.
Okay, but let's look at the positives of it. Never have to do your makeup. Free rent.
Ever.
I mean,
all the rats you could eat.
All the rats you could eat. Which again,
all you could eat rats
again,
inside the walls.
That was your question. I do not think he was eating the rats. I think he simply didn't want them in his walls where he lives.
Which makes so much more sense.
I mean, it's essentially just like a 30-year-old living at home, except he chose to live in the walls.
Right.
He could have just lived in his parents' house. Yeah, it's basically quarantine.
It's quarantine. So, you know, do I want to be Brahms? No. Do I sympathize with him?
Are you Brahms?
Am I Brahms? Like,
This is an interesting question because, Allison, I never thought to ask you, why are you recording this from inside the walls of your parents' house?
I know.
And why do you have that mask on?
That it hasn't come up, but I am jacked, you know, and that's important.
You look incredible.
Thank you.
Just been eating entirely rat meat. That's basically what keto is, right?
Isn't that Atkins? Ratkins?
Ratkins! Okay. Oh.
I'm on the Ratkins diet. I live in the walls and only eat rats.
I mean, he looked incredible. So, I mean, you look fabulous.
Yeah, like it worked.
We just need to get you two crazy kids together. You get a house together where you could both, with enough room for you both to live in the walls. So that's what I want for you and Brahms.
What would be the dating app for Brahms? It's like, not like, what's the farmer, like farmers only?
Oh,
It'd
yeah.
Be like, you know, something, you know. Rats.com. I don't know.
Rats.com. Brahms for Brahms. I don't know.
Brahms for Brahms. What about you, Hallie? I guess I'm Brahms or Brahms's wife.
You're Brahms's wife, Mrs. Brahms.
Mrs. Brahms. And I don't have in-laws because they're dead. It's exactly. A dream.
It's a perfect situation. Right, he could have just lived in the house. Anywho, if you haven't listened to our Bravo episode, please listen for any
please
context.
Please go listen to The Boy.
Probably yes. Talking about a movie you have not seen. But I would say for me, the character I am is Randy Meeks from Scream. So sort of a friend who knows everything about horror movies. And mm-hmm. Of course, will I survive? Absolutely not. I am annoying. I'm a know-it-all, but I don't know enough to preserve myself and take myself out of the situation.
Which actor was that?
He is played by, I believe it is Jamie Kennedy. I want to make sure. Yes, Jamie Kennedy. He is in Scream, Scream 2, Scream 3. I hope he comes back for Scream 5. Oh, no, I guess he can't.
Isn't he dead?
Yeah, but then I think he died several times, I believe. I think that's the great thing about the Scream franchise.
Is you don't
just bring him back and be like, oh, yeah, we thought he was dead, but he just moved away or whatever.
He's alive. Surprise.
But he was killed. But, you know, you could retrofit anything. So I would say I'm the annoying friend who knows a lot about horror, but doesn't have other skills. Like, for example, shutting the fuck up or protecting my own well-being.
Two of those three things have made you a perfect podcast co-host for me. So,
and hopefully we're never hunted down by Brahms or any other murderer, your new husband.
I would tell my husband not to do that.
Exactly. You're not going to stand for that.
No, I will leave him.
Kat, thank you again for that wonderful question and for being our sound engineer and being on this recording right now. We really appreciate it.
We love you.
And it is my birthday. We were recording this ahead of time, but it is my birthday today. And
happy
I'm glad.
Happy birthday,
thank
Hallie.
You. You know, another year older, closer to the grave. Feels good. Feels really good.
Well, that's fitting for our nature month, as you will return to the earth even sooner now.
Exactly. And I hope that if I do, I enact my revenge in the same way that the earth does in this week's movie, which is, of course, M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening.
Yes.
And this is a great example of, like, as I've said on the pod before, I am a huge M. Night Shyamalan apologist. Mm-hmm. I like all of his movies, and yet I recognize many of them are perhaps not as good as the others. That's fine. Mm-hmm. This movie is, I would say, probably his worst one. It came out in 2008. Interestingly, his only film so far to receive an R rating, which is fascinating. However, it received generally negative reviews from critics and grossed $163 million worldwide against its $48 million production budget. It doesn't matter if it's good. If it's M. Night Shyamalan, I'll see it. I believe I saw Happening twice, if not three times, in the theaters, even though I didn't care for it. So see what you will about it. I don't know what that means about me, but I think that I've earned the right to present The Happening to you wholeheartedly.
Yes. When we brought this up, when this was like the movie for today, I was like, oh, I wonder what this is. And then as soon as I opened the trailer, I was like, I remember this movie. I mean, I don't know anything about, I know it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, and I remember that Mark Wahlberg is in it, and I remember seeing the trailers. But beyond that,
Allison, mm-hmm. What did you think of the Happening trailer? What were your thoughts?
I mean, I think the thing about M. Night Shyamalan movies is they make great trailers.
100%.
Because 100%. You know that there's a crazy explanation twist that mm-hmm. comes at the end. And like all they're giving you is like, here is all the weird shit going on. And like it makes less and less sense as it goes on until like an answer that is obviously not part of the trailer. And I just think that's a great way to do a trailer.
Absolutely.
It's so fun. Like that, I'm hooked.
Yeah, leave a little something for us to figure out.
Yeah.
And we always take a baseline scary for every episode. And Allison, how scary do you find the concept of nature fighting back?
Oh, very. Mm-hmm. As someone who is alive in 2021, I would say that it's been nothing but a horror show watching the earth. I mean, I guess like it's not fighting back when we're just destroying it. But the virus feels certainly like a retaliatory
there is something like thrilling or at least like understandable to give nature like a sentience that it does not have. Things in the natural world are sentient in a certain sense, but sort of the idea of the earth launching an attack on us.
Yes.
Is it going to happen? Should it? Well, I think watching this movie, I'm like, listen, the earth deserves this, you know? Like
I was going to say, we do deserve it.
Yeah, we can't really argue this wouldn't be a good idea. So M. Night Shyamalan was ahead of the curve there, I think.
Yeah.
And finally, would you like to guess the twist? Do you think there will be a twist? What do you think is causing the happening is the fundamental question.
guess the twist.
I mean, now based on these questions, of course, it feels like there's something like within the earth that is killing people.
I need you to be more specific, Allison. I need you to say, what part of nature do you think is causing this?
Lava?
Great. Love it. Absolutely. And I will say
I was saying it, I knew how stupid it sounded.
No, it's not at all. And I would say it's certainly not stupider than the actual movie.
Oh, good. Okay, great.
But I think it's interesting because this is not a traditional twist. Like, the answer is sort of suggested pretty early. And that is a bizarre decision, given that this would have made one hell of a twist if they had waited till later in the movie. But know it earlier, I think maybe he was just trying to, like, you know, it's written, produced, directed by M. Night. I think he was just being like, I can't be the guy, but that's my only thing.
That's always just doing a, like, surprise.
Unfortunately, like, that's the best part, and that's what I would love about his movies.
That's why people know who you are.
100%. So, I mean, look, will I see his next movie, Old? Will we be doing it? Absolutely, of course.
Oh, yeah, we have to.
100%. But in the meantime, let us begin. We are about to ruin The Happening. So we open, to me, this is like, similar to like the beginning of Midsommar, which we have not covered, you have not seen, but the first 10 minutes of this movie are genuinely terrifying. We open, it's Central Park, it's 8:30 a.m. We see the wind blowing through
That's
the trees,
scary.
Gorgeous, like everyone's like walking their dog and like taking their kids out. It's fun. This woman, Claire, is reading her book and she turns to her and says, I forgot where I am. And her friend, who is played by Kristen Connolly, who is a star of Cabin in the Woods, which we absolutely will be doing soon. Okay. She said, oh, you're at the place where the killers need to decide what to do with the crippled girl. We don't see crippled anymore, M. Night, but, you know.
I don't think we did in 2008 either, but.
No. And so Christian suddenly hears somebody screaming in the distance, and she says to her friend, that's weird. Those people over there look like they're clawing at themselves. Is that blood? And then she turns and she realizes everyone in the park except for her is either frozen in place or slowly walking backwards.
What?
And Claire, her friend, turns to Kristen and says again, I forgot what page I'm on. And as Kristen watches, Claire takes, like, you know those hair sticks that people used to use, and like they put like a bun, and there's sort of chopstick
length. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Takes one out and then just stabs herself in the neck. But Kristen doesn't even react. She suddenly has a blank expression and is staring ahead. Meanwhile, three blocks away at a construction site, these construction workers are hanging out. One of them is telling a dirty joke when suddenly they hear a body fall behind them. And they run over, and it's one of their colleagues. And they're obviously distraught. They're like, oh, my God, he fell off the scaffolding. They call, you know, for an ambulance. All of a sudden, before they can even react, they hear another body falling off the building. And then another body falling off the building.
Oh,
and then another body. And people on the sidewalk are screaming and pointing and, like, running over. And the foreman looks up, and as he looks, five more construction workers just walk off the side of the building and fall. And he looks up and he says, God in heaven. Cut to... So, like, you can just feel how scary that is.
That's terrifying.
And I feel like we then have to address this other part of the movie is, look, I really don't like to weigh in on the quality of the movies. But I, unfortunately, due to this movie, have to weigh in on... It's quality of Mark Wahlberg's acting.
I mean, in the trailer alone, I mean, he's a teacher?
High school science teacher.
He's like, have you guys read this New York Times article to like a high school class? And I was like, everything about what just happened is incorrect.
It is, frankly, a baffling casting decision. So look, Mark Wahlberg has his strengths, action, comedy. You know, I'm not saying that he's untalented. The man cannot act afraid. I will also say the other lead in this movie is Zooey Deschanel, who I found so charming and so funny on New Girl. She also cannot act afraid. And these are very baffling casting choices in a movie where they are the main characters through which we are experiencing the film. And I don't want to say it, except watching this the whole time, you're like, if these were any other actors, it would still be a goofy-ass movie, but there would be something. Mark Wahlberg, he's given you nothing.
He's never going to be afraid. People that I associate with, like, expressing sincere emotion very well.
Yes.
Like, they can both do, like, over-the-top or, like again, comedy, action, or, like, they're both, like, good at being, like, a straight man and being funny or something. But, like, they're not who I want to go to for, like, you're in a crisis. You're in horror. You're scared. Yeah.
And so I just want to say this because there's a lot of Mark Wahlberg explaining different scientific theories. Mm-mm. And it Mm-mm. is a lot Mm-mm. to get through. Mm-mm. We open on, so he plays a high school science teacher, Elliot Moore. And he turns to his students and he says, have you heard about this recent phenomenon of honeybees vanishing? And he asks his students to offer why this might be happening. And one kid guesses disease, you know, one kid guesses pollution, another kid guesses global warming. And he's like, but they, you know, it's happening all over the country at once. How could it be a disease? Or like, no one finds the bees' bodies. How can it be, you know, mass pollution or whatever? Mm-hmm. And he calls on this kid, Jake, who doesn't have any guesses. And Elliot says to him,
you should be more interested in science, Jake. You know why? Because your face is perfect. The problem is your face is perfect at 15. Now, if you were interested in science, you would know facts like the human nose and ears grow a fraction of an inch each year. So a perfect balance of features now might not look so perfect 5 years from now. It might look downright whack 10 years from now.
Allison, this has, I would argue, nothing to do with the film whatsoever.
Why? Just like, why?
Also, this high school student, Jake, is played by a 30-year-old model.
Yeah.
So, like, he's good. He's made his throw.
He's fine. It worked.
And so he asks again, Jake, just throw anything out. What happened to the bees? And Jake says, an act of nature and we'll never fully understand it, which I just don't think scientists would agree with. You can't just chalk up something like about bees disappearing.
Guess we'll never know.
So I was like, okay, well, we know by now, okay, what happened. However, I looked up colony collapse disorder, which is what they're talking about. Okay. And interestingly, so there was a time where bee hives were essentially falling apart, like the hierarchy wasn't holding, and then like the swarms, the bees would disappear, and nobody knows why. And the bees are dealing with a lot of stuff, pesticides, climate change, habitat loss, malnutrition. But the thing is, the bees are doing better now, and they still don't really know why at the time this movie was made, and they came up with the name colony collapse disorder in 2006. Based on my reading, they still don't know why what was going on. And eventually, I think that that doesn't mean there's no explanation, but they don't as of yet have it. I thought, well, it's probably all these things, like a confluence of all these things. So you can't really pull out a different one. But I was very mad. I was going to be like, we know why this happened. And I looked up. It's like, well, I guess we really don't. So I guess the point of it we want to say is like science and nature, just because science names something doesn't mean we can necessarily know why exactly it happened.
Okay, got it.
That being said, I do feel like Elliot is going to be if in real life, he's an anti-vaxxer by 2016. Like, if you're telling your students, like,
they're going to get old and ugly.
And he says to Jake, you're right. In the end, science will come up with a reason and put it in the books, but in the end, it'll just be a theory. We fail to acknowledge that there are forces at work beyond our understanding. That's just not what science is. Science is, we know that there's stuff beyond our understanding, and we're going to try to understand it.
Yeah, this guy's not wearing a mask in a Trader Joe's, that's for sure.
Oh, 100%. He's yelling, with a perplexed look on his face.
Yes.
And so he tells Jake, I was joking with you, you're going to be a heartthrob for the rest of your life. Like, you're going to be gorgeous forever.
I feel like that was Mark Wahlberg trying to, like, tell himself, like, his own reality.
I mean, I will say, having said all that mean stuff about his acting, he looks great.
He looks great.
And so does Zoe's H note. They're all having this, like, oh, wow, our teacher's, like, so cool and interesting. Unfortunately, the vice principal comes to his room, pulls him out, and all the teachers are meeting in the auditorium, and the principal informs them there has been what is believed to be a terrorist attack in Central Park. They think it's...
Are they all in New York?
So this is take... We see right now. The school's in New York. The school is pretty close to Central Park. And the authorities are saying, we think it's a chemical toxin that's been released in the park, which was kind of a big fear, I mean, at this time period, like anthrax, I feel like there was a lot of fears around like a chemical attack or that kind of thing. So we're going to release all the students to go home. In my mind, I'm like, aren't you just releasing them into an airborne chemical event?
Yeah, it feels like the school is the safest place to be. But
Rather than now you're going to go outside and be exposed to it. Anywho, I'm not in charge of this kind of thing. And the principal said there are three stages of this illness. The first stage is confused speech. The second is physical disorientation and loss of direction. And the third stage is fatal. But he's not saying what we have already seen, which is by fatal, he means it makes you kill yourself.
Yeah.
Which is what we
not
saw.
Just
that
like,
woman
oh,
do.
I dropped dead. It's like I stabbed myself with a bad hair accessory.
Exactly. And while we're there, we meet Elliot's good friend, the math teacher, John Leguizamo, who is great. And I think is like a great actor. So I'm like, okay, great. John Leguizamo's
finally,
you know. And again, this is, everyone's doing the best they can. That's I want to give them
odd casting. That's all it is.
Yes. So Elliot's like, that's really odd that it was in the park, which again, I don't think is odd at all. I think like that, if anything, makes sense. So there's a lot of people there, you know. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, they didn't consult science before they did this horrible thing to people. So the principal says we're dismissing everyone. And Elliot sort of reminds students of the rules of experimentation because he's like, okay, this weekend you still have to do your science report even though some sort of terrorist event has been going on.
Love that there's still homework.
And there's a note written on the board that says, if the bee disappeared off the face of the globe, then man would only have 4 years left to live. And the note is attributed to Albert Einstein. And I was like, I don't think Albert Einstein is the Albert Einstein of bees. Like, he knew a lot, but like, why was he talking about bees?
Yeah, that doesn't seem like it's part of his world, you know?
Yeah, Albert Einstein is the Einstein of two things: physics, marrying your own cousin, okay? Yeah. And that's all you get.
Hair.
Having amazing hair.
Yes, having wild hair.
So Julian says, okay, so just so you know, my mom lives in Philadelphia. She's freaking out. She's saying, please come and stay with me. Get out of the city. So Julian is going to pick up his wife and daughter, and they're going to go and catch a train to Philadelphia. And he says, would you want to go stay with us? And Elliot's like, yeah, let me call my wife. We're kind of like, I don't know, we're fighting. Like, something's going on in my marriage. And Julian's like, I'm going to be honest with you. I remember on your wedding day, I walked in on your wife in her wedding dress and she was sobbing. And I knew that she wasn't ready to leap in, you know? And it's like, first of all, I think you have one day to tell your friend that. And that day is on your wedding day.
Right.
If you see that on their wedding day and you don't bring it up, if you don't march over and say, I just have to give you this information, you don't bring it up. And you certainly don't bring it up during a terrorist event.
No, you're not like, by the way, don't think your wife is super into things. Hope we don't die. Like, that's just not
right.
How this
like,
works.
That's not a
friendship.
Good...
That's not good. Yeah.
Okay. So, my question to you, Allison, if you walked in on Dave on our wedding day in his beautiful big
in his
ball
wedding
gown,
dress.
In his wedding dress, crying, do you think you would tell me?
I think if I had enough context to know he wasn't just like overly emotional and I would need to know that it was like actually not. Cause like I would, like, I feel like if I got married, there's a world where like I would just like cry right before. Cause like my reaction to any swell of emotion is to just break down into tears.
100%. Even if it's also, positive. Like, I was like, how do you know it's about the marriage and not like something in her family?
Right.
Like,
my
really
dad
intense.
Couldn't be here. That's devastating.
Yeah. Like, there's some family fighting. You know, I wouldn't just be like, ah, oh, she's a bad wife and she's going to leave you or whatever.
I don't think I would jump to she's not ready to get married to you and live for however many years with that piece of information stored in the recesses of my brain and wait for a terrorist attack to tell you about it.
Exactly. And Elliot's like, okay, well, here we are, you know. But Elliot said, yeah, I'm going to go get Alma and we're going to meet you at the train station. We'll go with you and we'll stay with your mom. Because they're like, well, it's the weekend. We'll just get out of town with you, you know. Yeah. So... back at their house, Alma, played by Zoe Deschanel, she's watching the news and she keeps getting a call from someone named Joey. So we're like, okay, so there's fighting in the relationship. She's getting calls from this guy. She's having an affair. Elliot walks in. She kind of hides her phone. And we hear on the news that they're thinking that the airborne toxin blocks the signals in your brain that control your self-preservation instinct and throws it in reverse. So essentially the chemical is hijacking our desire to preserve ourselves and then forcing us to kill ourselves.
Kill ourselves.
And And all was like, what kind of terrorists are these? Like, just when you thought there couldn't be any more evil that could be invented. And Elliot's like, okay, I need 2 minutes to pack. And so they're running around and while he's packing, he puts on Allison a mood ring.
No.
Because apparently he wears a mood ring, I guess not during the day. Meanwhile,
well, he's a man of science, so he needs to present as one.
And to be fair, if I was in high school and I saw my teacher wearing a mood ring, I would never stop clowning them. That would be like whole thing that we knew about them.
I would never take a test. I'd be like, you wear a mood ring. Like, it's like you don't have any authority.
Why do you ask your ring how you feel about me taking this test?
Yeah, what's my grade? Ask the ring. Is it purple?
So they end up, meet up with Julian at the train station. His wife, Yvette, got stuck in traffic, so she's going to take the next train. So okay. Julian is there with his daughter, Jess, who's 8 years old. And the cutest little girl, she's obviously very freaked out. Her mom's not there. So she's kind of dead silent and will only whisper to her dad. So she's like a sweetheart who's unfortunately going to go through absolute hell for the next hour and a half. And Julian is like super awkward and weird with Alma. And he says to her, I'm really glad you decided to come. It's like, again, there's some sort of tragedy that we understand at this point to be a terrorist attack. Don't be a bitch.
Yeah, now is not the time.
And so Alma's like, can I talk to you? And pulls Elliot aside. It's like, did you tell him that we were fighting? Like, why would you do this? He's like, oh, no, he guessed. And they have this whole fight. And she says, on the train, I'm going to sit by myself. We're not going to be able to get seats together anyways because they're waiting. And it's someone who lived in New York. When they call the train, you are getting on the train.
It is a mad dash to go from, like, when all of a sudden they're like, track 13E, and, like, everybody runs and tries to go down one single file escalator. And I will have to say, it is one of the worst train systems that I've ever ridden.
We're not going to hash out, like, our marriage. Like, no, we're going to get in there. We have to hash out. We'll hash out on the train, you know?
Yeah, I sit there and I stare at that board until something says where to go, and then I dash over there as fast as I can.
So they get on the train. Unfortunately, we then cut to Rittenhouse Park in Philadelphia. Allison.
Okay.
People are having fun. There's a cop chatting with a cabbie. You know, people are walking their dogs. Suddenly, we see the wind blow through the trees, and everyone on the sidewalk freezes. And the cabbie or the cop takes out his gun and shoots himself in the head, falls to the ground, drops the gun. The cabbie then gets out of the cab, picks up the gun, shoots himself in the head, drops the gun. And then we see a woman's legs as she pivots off the sidewalk to go and to pick up the gun to shoot herself in the head. So whatever this thing is, it is also now in Philadelphia, which is where they're going.
Great.
So we are going, you know, out of the frying pan and into the fire, unfortunately. On the train, Alma calls Joey and he tells him, you've got to stop calling me. You're acting like the Fatal Attraction guy. We ate tiramisu together. That is it. But Joey is not calling to tell her that he wants to be with her, whatever. He's telling her that the event, the happening, has just happened in Boston, too. So he's not even calling about Philadelphia, which is where they're going. Right. It's happening all over the East Coast. So obviously everyone's freaking out. Julian's wife is saying, like, I'm not going to wait for the train. I'm just going to get on a bus. I'm going to Princeton, New Jersey, and then I'll figure it out from there. Like, I'm just going to keep going west, which is what everyone seems to be like. Just keep going west if this is happening all up the seaboard. So everyone on the train is, like, freaking out, like, texting, like, trying to get people on the phone. And they pull into Filbert, Nowheresville, Pennsylvania, eastern Pennsylvania. The train they force everyone off the train. And they're like, we're not going further than this. And Elliot is enraged and, you know, he stomps over to the conductors. Right. And he's like, what's going on? Tell us. It's like, sir, we lost contact. And Elliot said, with whom? And one of the conductors says, with everyone. Now, Allison, I got to ask you at this point of the film, what would you do?
What would you do?
I mean, I would get off that train.
Yeah.
I would grab my stuff and I would just like... I assume they're in, like, a town.
Yeah, it's a small town, but, like, there's still, like, establishments. Yeah.
Right. So, like, go to the nearest, like, business and, like, call and find, like, where can I get a car?
Yes.
And just, like, get in a car and drive and just keep driving.
Yeah, where's the closest Enterprise rent-a-car or Hertz?
Yeah, find me an Enterprise. Get me a Hertz. Get me a budget, you know?
At this point, I would call
Lyft.
I'll take a sedan. And it's like, if I have to pay $200 for you to drive me,
drive me west.
Just keep going. Yeah, drop me off 20 minutes in. You know, like, this seems like something I'm going to throw money at, you know?
Yes, me too. This is where you just say fuck it and put it on your credit card.
Yeah.
You're never paying that bill. You're all going to die.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, if they can find my body, they can,
fine. Yeah.
Bill
then
my
Capital
estate.
One can go nuts.
But Ellie is reassuring them, like, we're in a small town. Like, there's no way these terrorists are going to target this, like, Nowheresville, Pennsylvania. So everyone crowds into the nearest diner. They're, like, using the bathroom and, like, you know, just ordering food. So it's, like, a mass of people at this little tiny place because there's really nowhere else to be. And so they're all watching the news. And Jess, obviously... the child is incredibly freaked out because now they're separated from their mother and the mother's plans really change really fast. So they don't know when they're going to see her mother next. Mm-hmm. And to calm her, Elliot tells Jess about his mood ring. And he says some things I just don't think they're supported by science. Again, I tried to Google this. I'm not saying I don't believe in auras. I'm just saying I don't know if science has confirmed that they exist.
Yeah. I don't have enough information to feel that they exist.
Right. I'm fine if they exist. He tells Jess, you know that everyone gives off energy, right? Again, she's eight. I don't know why she would know that
yet.
Yeah, what?
She's like, oh, yeah, I know energies.
I take science. He says, it's scientifically proven. They've got these cameras. It can record what color you are when you're feeling different things. People that are angry give off a different color than people that are sad. And then he puts on the mood ring and it says, oh, you know, it looks like the colors, that's the color when you're about to laugh. And he sort of like acts goofy until she laughs. And I looked it up, and I did not find any evidence that science has proven the success or if anything, it's different because, like, we're not talking about that. We're talking about mood rings. But Interestingly,
those are two different not sciences.
Interestingly, I did find something that says, like, people who see auras might have synesthesia, which, like, other people have, where it's like you can, like, see the color of music or you can, like, smell mathematical equations.
Yeah, your senses are, like, interconnected and have, like,
yeah,
which so I believe that.
Yeah, like that's, and again, that's something where science has explained it. So it's like, well, science can't explain everything. Well, this makes sense to me as a potential explanation for people who can see auras. That makes sense.
Yes.
But he mood cheers rings, her up.
Whole different.
Mood ring is just because if your hand's hot or not.
Right.
I don't know the science. You know, I don't know
also,
the science.
Also, you don't buy them at a hospital. You buy them at a Hot Topic. Like, they're not, it's not like they're, like,
you get them at a gumball machine at your dentist or whatever. Your children's dentist. Like, this is not.
Your dentist is not like you have gum?
No. I was imagining, like, when you're a kid. Like my dentist said. Yeah. Also, did I ever tell you that I tried to go to my childhood dentist till I was, like, 30? Did I tell you this? And it was like basically like Ross from Friends, where you still see his pediatrician. And then finally, yes. I call. I think I was 29, and I called, and the woman's like, "Oh, hang on a second." Oh, she said, "Oh, like, how old is your child?" And I was like, "Oh no, it's for me." And then she came back on after a minute. She's like, "You know, I talked to the dentist, and I think he thinks it would be better if you got a new dentist." And I'm like, "That's on him for seeing me after 18. He led me on, you know."
Right. He let this go. He's the one who let this spiral out of control. Right.
I'm just kidding. I was humiliated. I was like, "Yes, of course. Good day."
Of course, it's super embarrassing.
So back at the diner, literally, they're having this sweet moment. Jess is like smiling, like happy for 1 second, and this woman turns and shows Elliot a video on her phone, and it's a zookeeper walking into a lion's den and being torn limb from limb. And it's just like, don't what? Like, there's a kid right there. She can see it, you know? And so everyone's just kind of loitering at the diner. And the diner owner turns on the news and he yells, they don't think it's terrorists anymore. And so they turn it on, and an anchor is explaining that they don't think it can be terrorists because it's happening everywhere in the Northeast and it's pushing its way into Pennsylvania. So this is not an isolated incident by any means. Suddenly, the power goes out.
No.
Which, you know, some guy stands up and says, if we stay here, we die. They said it's not happening about 90 miles from here. We just have to tell our story walking. Everyone just has to keep moving west. And I was like,
I don't know.
I mean, but.
Yes, but no. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I hope you can find a car because, like, I'm not walking 90 miles. You know, like, if I have to walk 90 miles, I'm going to pull an Allison and just sort of remove myself from the situation.
Yourself. Yeah. But also, it feels like it's in the air. Like, it doesn't feel like it feels like a car is, like, actually protecting you.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't want to be outside. If this is, because everyone who's affected has been outside. So in a very funny scene, they, like, go outside to try to get a ride with one of the townies that's also in the diner. Literally everyone, both that was living in this town and on the train, apparently is able to get into a car and drive away. They are the last people there. I was like, so everyone was able to hitch a ride except for them. Like, they have a child. Yeah. Somebody would have asked them.
Yeah.
So luckily, a nursery owner and his wife stop, and they said, okay, we're going to stop at our nursery and pick up some stuff, and then we're going to keep driving, but you could ride with us.
Okay.
Julian decides that he cannot get in touch with a vet, phone or email, text, and there's another car that's headed back to Jersey to pick up some friends. He says, I'm going to meet her in Princeton. I'm going to go look for her. So could you take care of Jess? I just think going back east is not an option. And Elliot says, I don't know if this is a great idea. But Julia says, I have to do it. Like, I have to go look for her. Again, if this is me, Dave, I'm telling you now, do not come back. Yeah. I will either be alive or I won't be. But either way, you could die. Like, if this thing is still going westward, it's not worth it. But Julian's like, no, we're all going to be fine. But when Elma goes to take Jess's hand, Julian says to her in a, like, a really mean voice, like, don't you take my daughter's hand unless you mean it. And it's like, even if Elma was having, like, a full-blown affair, that doesn't apply to this situation.
No. Also, you asked her to take her. Like, Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. But again, that's the writing. You know what, Keita? And so, you know, and I'm like, honestly, you could always get a different wife. I mean, like, I hate to be this terrible, but like, you know, but unfortunately, your daughter cannot get new parents, you know?
Yes.
Like,
yes. Right.
So they, Jess regrettably, you know, she's dead silent and stays with Elliot and Alma, not obviously not happy about it. But luckily, the nursery couple take them to their house. And the husband's like, oh, we're going to pack them some food. You guys like hot dogs? Hot dogs are really underrated. Like, they're full of protein. Also, I think I know what's causing these mass suicides. It's the plants.
Okay.
And they're like, okay. And then he proceeds to tell us that plants can react to human stimulus and release chemicals. And they're like, okay. But there's, like, no way for them to test it. Allison, that's when we find out it's plants.
Wait, so the plants are all releasing chemicals into the air that trick our brains into killing us.
Yes.
What?
Yeah. Well, we'll get into more theories about why this is happening. But
But
when
that's
he says
what's
it's
happening.
The plants, we understand now it's the plants.
Okay.
So unfortunately, while they're packing up at this couple's house, we see Julian's Jeep has already gotten to Princeton. They're playing a little fast and loose with the timeline, but that's fine.
Sure.
Unfortunately, as they roll into Princeton, there's like a landscaping crew, and they look up, and the landscaping crew has hung themselves from the trees over the road. And that's the thing about this movie is like, the deaths are genuinely horrifying and scary.
Yes.
And somebody in the car starts screaming, and Julian's trying to calm her down by telling her a math riddle. And he's like,
no, math doesn't calm anyone down.
So Allison, I'm going to ask you the math riddle. Okay. So how much money would you have if I said I would pay you a penny on the first day and then 2 pennies on the second and then 4 pennies on the third day and then just kept doubling it every day for a month? How much money would I have? Or would you have?
A month being 30 days?
Yes.
I don't know.
Just throw a guess at.
Like a million?
Over $10 million.
Oh, wow.
Now, did I look that up? No. So I'm just going to take their word
no,
for
that's,
it.
I believe you. All right. That's you know, I don't know if that's a riddle. It's kind of more just like a word problem.
Fun fact, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, while she's trying to think of the answer and she's guessing like $10, $20, you know, they look up and they're in a Jeep. This is why you should never own a Jeep. There is a cut in the roof of the fabric roof of the Jeep where
wind
is getting
in. Actually enclosed.
Yes. And the next thing we see the Jeep from the outside and it is stops dead in the middle of the road and then it speeds up and it slams into a tree, throwing the driver and one of the passengers out. Julian survives. Unfortunately, he then gets out and he sits in the middle of the road and he picks up a broken piece of glass from the wreck and just starts cutting into his arms.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, we're back with the nursery couple in the car. Right. They're driving westward. You know, and now the radio's like, and luckily the radio's still there. They could actually get news.
Yeah.
And they're like, now they think it might be water contamination. Like maybe it's been released in the water and that's why it's affecting this bigger area. They don't have any idea. And so Elliot has a map and they're driving through a little town called Hokum. And then they're going to get on the highway and get over the state line, which I thought was weird. He had a map because like that couple's from there. But like either way, he has a map. Unfortunately, as they drive to the highway, there are dead bodies covering the road, like a dozen or more dead bodies. So they can't drive over it. They turn around, they drive back, and they run into they encounter a Humvee with a military private played Jeremy Strong, who I believe is from Succession. And he's playing a private, and he is very distraught. And he's like, don't go back the way I was coming from, because I tried to go back to the military base, like, when this all started happening. And then from the outside, all this military personnel are just caught in the barbed wire.
Deaths are
horrifying.
Creative.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they're stopped at, like, a four-way intersection. Two cars come from the other two directions, and they are also, like, there's just bodies. Like, it's happening everywhere. Yeah. So then there's, like, everyone's maybe, like, a two dozen people are stopped in the road. Like, well, what the fuck do we do? Like, if every direction people are dying, what are we supposed to do?
Where do we go?
And unfortunately, now that they can't reach Julian on his phone because he's dead, And Elliot noticed that Alma's got a ton of calls from this Joey person, but she kind of brushes it off. And I do agree, like, get into it later. You know, like, if you're having an emotional
affair. Now is not the time to be like, who's calling you? Yeah.
And this woman, they're all kind of crowded around. This woman's able to get her her daughter on the phone who lives in Princeton. So Elliot's like, oh, how are things in Princeton? And the woman says, well, my daughter says everyone's dead outside. And then the daughter starts to like talk funny, which we know is the sign of her being affected. Yes. And she's saying like, I can see in calculus. Then Elliot suddenly says, what do you mean everyone's dead? And I'm like, what is this movie? Like, what is this character where it's like, is he supposed to be dumb? Like, why are we ahead of him? That's a very unusual thing, especially in a horror movie.
And especially like if his job is science teacher. Like,
yeah,
he's not like local idiot.
Right. Like, it's like everyone in the crowd already reacted. They got
right.
it. Why didn't he get it, you know?
No, that's worrisome.
And so the woman puts her daughter on speakerphone and she's just saying calculus, calculus. And then we hear the daughter running and throwing herself through the window. And the mother is sobbing. And Elliot takes the phone and he says, I hear wind from outside. It's like, yeah, man, we just heard her throw herself through the window.
We know what's going on.
We should not be ahead of you. You know, we should be right there with you, you know?
Right.
So, you know, everyone's trying to console this woman. Obviously, they can't. And also now, we know that Julian is dead. You know, if he's not dead now, he will be
soon. If that's
what's
happening in Princeton, like, that's what's happening.
Yeah. And Jess and Elliot have, like, a sweet moment where he's, like, comforting her and she's, like, whispering in his ears. But I'm like, this girl is going to need decades of therapy in order to deal with both of her parents. Because, like, also if her mother made it to Princeton, her mother's also dead, you know?
Also dead. Yeah.
So Alma puts Jess asleep in the car and they're all sort of like, okay, what are we... You know, like she says to the nursery couple, if you think it's the plants, what is happening? You know, and the nursery guy's like, well, you know, plants have the ability to target specific threats. So like when tobacco plants are infected with caterpillars, they put in a chemical to attract wasps to kill the caterpillars. So like—
Is that real?
Apparently, yes. And so it's like plants are very sophisticated. They're not like sentient the way we are. But and Alma says— if
they can protect themselves. Yeah.
Yes. So she's like, okay, if this theory is true, like, what plants do you think are doing it? And the nursery husband says that plants have the ability to communicate with other species of plants. So ostensibly, any and all species of plants can
all
be doing
plants?
This. In which case, it's like, well, then we're fucked, you know?
Yeah,
like, if that's the case.
There's plants everywhere.
So Elliot's talking to the private, and they're like, okay, what we're going to have to do is just everyone get off the road. And we're just going to walk into this nearby county, which is very sparsely populated, and be like, if... Because they're like, maybe it's still terrorism. We, you know, not everyone's on board with the plant thing. So they're like, if we're just off the roads and we are in a rural area, the likelihood that we will be targeted and found is very low, you know. So they break into two groups, and it's basically the first group who's ready to go right then. So Alma, Elliot, and Jess, they're in the first group. It's like 10 people. They just start walking through a field to get off the road. The nursery couple stayed behind to like get their stuff from their car. So they're in the slightly bigger group. Unfortunately, while they're in this field, the larger group suddenly stops. The private is screaming.
Kendall Roy, yeah.
Kendall Roy is screaming, my firearm is my friend, firearm is my friend. And the nursery couple sort of realizes what's happening. And the nursery husband takes his wife's hand. Over in the smaller group, which is like a little while farther ahead, they just hear gunshots. So we don't see any of it, but you know the private killed himself and then everyone's just taking his gun.
And then everybody killed themselves.
And they're like, what should we do? And they're screaming. And they're all like, Elliot, what should we do? Like, they're screaming and asking Elliot. And it's like, he's very easily overwhelmed. And he's saying, like, just give me a moment to think. I'm like,
he needs an hour.
There's like three or four other adults in this group. Like, you don't have to turn to this guy just because it's Mark Wahlberg, you know?
Right. In fact, that should be evidence that you shouldn't turn to him for answers.
Well, like, if you're this is a good example. Like, if you're in a crisis and Mark Wahlberg happens to be there, you don't have to put that all on him. You could for yourself say, okay, so what are we doing?
Right.
And they're all like, oh no. And Ellie says, is it the toxin? Is the toxin affecting him? It's like, man, what else would it be? We're
what
hearing wild gunshots.
About?
Yeah, like,
catch
of course
up,
it is. There's only one thing. We've not had anything introduced to make us be like, maybe it's something else.
It might be this. Yeah.
Right, it might be a serial killer. No, it's just the happening. It's just the happening and it's happening. And it's everything is really off in this movie in that way that it's really hard to describe where it's like, man, what else would it be? You've given me no other thing to think it is. I don't know. So everyone's freaking out and literally Elliot is screaming, give me a second. Why can't anyone give me a goddamn second? Like he literally can't think, you know?
Right.
And he's melting down and he starts whispering the steps of a scientific experiment to himself, which is also bizarre because like what are you using? And he says, what if it is the plants? And it's like, well, we already know
what
it's the plants.
It is.
And like, yeah, the guy already said it and Olma already asked him about it. We've already seen two moments where somebody said, it is the plants. And now you're like, what if it is the plants? Well, then what are we going to do?
Yeah, either way, we need solutions, buddy, not more questions.
If this, then what else?
Then that, yeah.
So luckily then Elliot comes up with an idea, and I give him that.
Thank God.
Says, we have to scatter. So like, if this is targeting groups of people, then we got to disperse into the smallest groups we can, which is a great idea.
Yes.
So they all start running, like through this field, and they're sort of separating. And he says, all we have to do, we have to just stay ahead of the wind. Allison, they have to outrun the wind.
Outrun the wind. Just stay ahead of the wind forever.
Right. So I guess we're thinking like the wind is blowing the chemicals from the plants. Like the plants can't like spray them out like spores. They have to like have the wind carry it.
But like,
I don't know. I just don't think that's how wind works. I don't think that a human could outrun the wind.
No.
At least some winds. I don't know. So they're
right.
All
and like,
running.
Where does it start? Like where? Like you don't know where it's coming from. You don't know where you need to go. Like it's not like
yeah. Luckily, Allison, the wind sweeps over them. It was just the regular wind, and they survive.
Okay.
And Elliot says, so it was the size of the groups. Could this really be happening? So from now on, I'm just going to be referring to this thing as the happening.
Yes.
Because he has two lines where he refers to it happening. That was fun. So we are now in a group where it is Elliot, Jess, and Alma. And they have two teenage boys who've ended up with them, who I feel really bad for because I'm like, what are these poor boys? They didn't know what they were getting into.
No.
And it's Jared and Josh. And they're kind of like a little, you know, like comedic relief, you know. And they end up at a house, but it's just a, like, you know, like an arrested development, like a show house in a development.
Yeah, model home.
So all the food is plastic. And they just stop and they use the bathroom. And I'm like, would the bathroom be set up? But I guess it is.
It doesn't matter. It's like set up enough.
Yeah. You know? And so they go in. You're they just have like a moment where they're like, okay, we're going to, but their plan is they're going to keep going into this rural area and keep going and just getting as far away from anybody, you know. And while they're there, Alma takes Jess to go to the bathroom, and Elliot is in the study of this room, and he sees a potted tree, and it is rustling. And Allison, he starts talking to it. He says, hello, my name is Elliot Moore. I'm just going to talk in a very positive manner, giving off good vibes. We're just here to use the bathroom. I hope that's okay. Then he realizes the plant is plastic and it's just rustling because like the air conditioning is on or something.
Okay, that's funny.
Yeah. So there are funny moments. And in those moments, Mark Wahlberg is funny. Like it's like, that makes sense.
That's a good space for him.
And so they go and get Josh and Jared and they're like, okay, we just have to, you know, keep going. And Josh says to Elliot, why is this happening? And Elliot says, I don't know for sure, Josh, but I've read this article about the coast of Australia, where they found large quantities of primordial bacteria. It hasn't been around for billions of years. It appeared in the water. It's toxic to humans. Fishermen who come into contact with it are dying. It feels similar to the bees dying. I don't know. It feels like a pattern. The pattern is climate change.
Okay.
This is a movie, but it's bizarre how they don't just say all of these things are climate change.
Right.
It's like, what's the pattern? It's the big pattern. And maybe it was just
global
like
global warming. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they're calling global warming. Now, obviously, we more likely refer to it as climate change.
Yeah.
But it's interesting where it's like you've made a movie about climate change. And somebody at the beginning suggests the bees were global warming. But then at no other point does somebody use that term. And I think that's an interesting,
weird choice.
I guess because maybe they thought like, oh, it's too obvious or like that's not scary. But it's obviously so scary that like none of us can wrap our head around.
It's scarier than anything else that we are confronted with right now.
Yeah. So Elliot says, luckily the nature of events like the Australian bacteria is that they crest and then they drop off and they stop. We just have to be alive when it's over. Obviously, I don't know how we know this about this particular happening, but we're going to assume that it's true.
Okay.
So as they trundle out into this, out into this rural area, next, you know, Josh and Jared are sort of grilling Ellie about why he doesn't have kids. And they're like, you have to really like take responsibility, which again is a comedic moment, but like we have to have a little bit of scare, you know?
Yeah.
And they find a radio, that's like tied to a fence somewhere, like a horse fence. And they turn it on. It says, everyone in the Northeast should travel west. Like the military is assembling a barrier that's on the western part of Pennsylvania, which is luckily that they were already doing. But so they're like, okay, we're doing the right thing. We're just going to keep going west.
Yes.
And Alma says, like,
barrier.
God knows what that means. Right, I mean,
whatever.
Yeah. I would say like the military, who knows what they're doing to people when they get there, you know?
Right.
And so Jess says, or Elma says, Jess needs to take a little break. And he said, okay, well, we'll go somewhere to this house. We'll see if they'll let us take a break and use their bathroom and get some food because we don't have anything on us. Like, and we have an 8-year-old girl, you know? Finally, Alma tells Elliot that she had tiramisu with this guy Joey from work. That's it. They did not sleep together. They only went out once, but she feels really guilty. And she says to him, I just wanted you to know in case we're going to die. And Elliot says to her, well, I just want you to know that I was at the pharmacy and I was met a very attractive pharmacist. And I asked her where the cough syrup was and I didn't even have a cough. And I almost bought it. I almost bought a completely superfluous bottle of cough syrup. And Alma said, are you joking? And he says, yes. And she says, thank you. So I guess to be like, I thank you for understanding that, like, I just made some dumb mistake.
Yeah. And that this isn't, like, super serious or whatever. Yeah. But also, okay.
Unfortunately, they then arrive at a house and they're knocking on the door. And the person's like, don't bring that toxic gas in here. The whole house is boarded up. So Elliot and Alma's like, okay, great. We'll just keep walking. Sorry. Yep. We didn't even bother you. Jared and Josh, because they're teenage boys, are like, you let us in, you pussy. We got an 8-year-old girl out here and you're ruining this. And like, open up, you bitch. The person.
They're not wrong, but yeah.
The person opens the door, puts a shotgun out, kills Josh and Jared in cold blood.
What?
Shoots one of them through the chest and then just wastes Jared, shoots Jared in the head. And Ellie and Elma run over to them, but there's nothing they can do. So not only has both of her parents died terribly, now Jess, who is 8, had to watch 2 teenage boys be brutally murdered. But I'm like, I guess this is America. So it's like, that's exactly what would happen. Where it's like,
that is absolutely what would happen.
Yeah, and it's horrible to watch. And you're like, but that's exactly like what somebody would do is just completely go crazy. Be like, okay, I'm just going to use my gun.
And be like,
I'm
afraid. Thank God I have all these guns. Yeah.
So, Allison, I have to ask you at this point in the film, who will survive?
Who will survive?
I mean, I want to. I hope that Elliot, Alma, and Jess all survive.
Okay.
To the end.
And those are the only people we have left, so.
Yeah, I think, like, they have to.
Yeah.
That's my thought.
Next thing you know, we're in a living room watching a news report, and they're saying, if anyone has yet to flee the Northeast, they're assuming everyone who hasn't shown up is either dead or is just like hunkering down because the border they're setting up has not received anyone in a couple hours. So they're like,
okay,
we don't know how many people are dead. We don't know how many people are holed up. And we pan out and the people watching us are 2 old ladies who have gas masks. Again, it's fun.
That's fun.
Yeah. So we also on the news, we watch Professor Kendall Wallace from Carnegie Mellon. And he says, well, based on the rising intensity of the happening, we can guess at a crude timetable, and we think that the attacks will be worse at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. And I'm like,
okay,
how would we know that?
What Why evidence would are we you think possibly this? Basing that
what
on?
Are we, yeah. we're, it's something that has never happened before.
Right. You're like, oh, based on our findings, what findings? Like, all you know is people are killing themselves.
You're not even saying what it is in the police report. Yeah, you're not even saying plants on TV.
Right.
But he says, usually with crests like this, they drop off. So ostensibly, if they could survive past 9 a.m., they will live. Again, there's no way to know this.
No reason to believe that.
Exactly. So they finally arrive in Arundel, Pennsylvania, out in the middle of fucking nowhere, and they find a house without power. But there is laundry in the line, and so Elliot goes and knocks, and he finds a woman, Mrs. Jones, the owner of the house, played by Betty Buckley, and she's on a rocking chair, and she has what I believe to be one of the more iconic lines in horror movies because it is so perfectly delivered. She's sipping lemonade, and she turns to Elliot, and she says, why you eyeing my lemon drink? And says it with such venom. And in a movie where it's just like, we Perfect. Haven't had like this like kind of scary character before.
Yeah.
And Elliot's like, oh no, I wasn't eyeing it. It's just like it's like a perfect horror movie moment. That's
fun. Yeah, because there hasn't really been like a villain, present, like somebody who's like presenting evil or like anything like that.
And I feel like M. Night Shyamalan is really good at like suddenly there's like a terrifying person with unknown motivations. For example, in Sixth Sense, where you know we find out the one ghost girl was poisoned by her stepmother. Mm-hmm. It's like, we don't know anything about that character, but that is the most terrifying thing I could possibly imagine.
Yes.
So he's really good at, like, all of a sudden, this woman, like, you know, and she ends up inviting them in, but you don't know what her deal is and you don't know like what her motivations are. She tells them that she does not have a radio or TV or the internet, and they're about to tell her about the happening. And she says, I don't want to know. I do not need to know.
I mean, I respect her.
Yeah. And she says, I guess I have to offer you like city slicker pieces of shit dinner, and I have to let you assholes stay here. Like, she's like mean and tense. But also she is like inviting them in. So it's like this weird, awkward, you know, dinner. And she says to them, while they're all having dinner, she goes, so what's with you two? And like asking about the relationship, which is fun.
I love asking questions like that where it's just like, what's with this?
Yeah, who's, so now you're trapped in my house. What is this?
And she says, yeah, define it.
She said, who's chasing who? Truth is, someone's always chasing someone. That's the way we're built. And Elliot raises his hand, and they're like, ha ha. But then Jess reaches to get a cookie, and Mrs. Jones just slaps her hand really hard, and they're like, oh, no. Like, it's unclear, like, is she unhinged, you know?
Right.
And I also, my question is logistically, like, how far apart do you have to be from other humans in order to count as two different groups? Because she has them staying upstairs in the guest room, and she's downstairs. Right. So I'm like, would the happening, would the plants know that they are not together? Or like, would the plants like, well, they're within a football field, so I'm going to group them? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
More than 6 feet? I don't, you know.
So they're kind of like playing like, what do we do? And then they hear a creak and Elliot goes to the hall and Mrs. Jones is in her nightgown. And they have this incredible exchange. She's like,
I hear you whispering. Planning on stealing something?
No, ma'am, we're not.
Plan on murdering me in my sleep.
What? No.
And the only way I could describe his acting is like, do you know how like on Mr. Ed, they would put peanut butter in the horse's mouth to make it move its lips?
Yes.
Mark Wahlberg in that moment is from the Yale Mouthful of Peanut Butter School of Acting.
School of Acting.
Where it's like, man, I don't know if you were in front of a green screen. It's like you're not even interacting with other people in a horror movie. It's wild. Anywho, in the morning, they wake up and Alma and Jess are out playing. Again, why would you go outside? I don't know.
Right. That's insane.
And Elliot's looking for her and he finds this weird creepy doll in Mrs. Jones's bedroom and she leaps out of nowhere because she's like, I knew you were going to try to steal my shit, as if you would try to steal like a giant antique doll. She's like, get out of my house. And she's screaming at him. And he's like, no, ma'am, I wasn't doing that. Let me just explain why we're here. What's going on? And she storms out to the garden and he's like following her. But before he can get there, he sees her stop dead.
And then
she starts to walk backward. And he's like, oh, shit, it's the happening is happening.
It's happening.
And he runs inside and he slams the door. But then Mama's like, houses aren't airproof. Like, they're not airtight.
They're not. Yeah, it's not the biodome. Like, you're not.
So the logistics of this don't make sense. I will, it is what it is. And he's slamming the doors. And as he's doing that, he could hear Mrs. Jones slamming her head on the side of the house
to kill herself.
And then finally she's just going around the house and finally gets to a window, just smashes her head through the window. So now the window's destroyed. And she keeps going in the house and then she smashes it through another window, trying to cause so much head trauma that she dies. Elliot's looking for Alma and Jesse, can't find them. And he realizes that there's a spring house behind the house. And Mrs. Jones has told us that it was used by the Underground Railroad. So as a result, like, you know, people would sort of be kept there as they're being, you know, sent further up north. And so there is an underground tube between the house and the spring house where you could talk to each other and it sounds like you're in the room. My belief is that M. Night Shyamalan heard about this or found this phenomenon, was like, I'm going to write a movie where someone has to use this. Because it doesn't really make any sense.
Reverse engineer the entire film just so I can use this one thing.
Yeah. And so he runs in and he realizes that Alma and Jess are playing in the spring house. They like found a frog. And he's like, shut the door and shut the windows. And they board up, but they're able to speak through the tube. And they both, like, apologize, and they're like, I love you, and I'm sorry. And, you know, they talk about how on their first date, he won her the mood ring, like, at the fair or whatever. Okay. And it turned purple, and you said it meant I was in love, but then we looked it up on the paper, and it said that I was horny. And Alma says to him, what color was love? But Allison, neither of them remember. The end. No, I'm kidding. That would have been a better ending.
God. I mean, a little poetic at least.
Yeah, and he's like, no, fuck it. If we're going to die, I'm going to come be with you. And it's like, okay, but like what that means is like you're going to like crush your skull in front of her. Like it's not like we're going to be together as like a nuclear bomb goes off and we're immediately killed. This is going to be like, we are going to like horribly
violently
die.
Yeah. Murder. Yeah. Ourselves.
So they, he walks out and they decide they're going to come out again. Like that means a child's going to have to kill herself. It's like a horrible, like everything that it implies is horrible. And they walk out from the spring house and the house and they walk together and he takes her hand and what do you know it, Allison? But the happening isn't happening anymore. They're fine. And that sucks because that means Mrs. Jones almost survived.
So close.
And she would have survived if they hadn't come. If she had been alone, she would have been fine.
Because she wouldn't have gone outside.
3 months later, we see Alma and Elliot taking care of Jess. Again, her parents are both dead. And they're sending her back for the first day that schools are open. Mm-hmm. And Jess has not spoken this whole time, again, because she's so traumatized. But when Alma puts a little photo of Jess's parents in her book bag, Jess says, thank you. I love you, Aunt Alma. And so, you know, obviously Alma's like, oh, she's healing again. I hope they have that kid in therapy.
I mean, not there aren't enough hours in the day to heal all of that trauma.
Elliot puts Jess on the bus to school, which I thought was interesting because I'm like, is he not teaching anymore? Wouldn't he already have to be at school? Like Alma would have to take her or something.
Right.
Also, what does Alma do? I don't know.
Are they in the city? Where are they?
They're in the city. I think it's supposed to be New York, but it's clearly shot in Philadelphia because a lot of M.A. Shyamalan's from Pennsylvania. So like a lot of his stuff is in Philadelphia. So on the news, we finally see that Dr. William Ross of the University of Chicago's Department of Botanical Toxicology says,
as everyone knows by now, traces of the neurotoxin have been found in some plants and trees. Now, most environmentalists feel that this event is like the red tide in the ocean. But instead of algae-killing fish, this happened on land.
And a caller calls in and they want to know why it set in so fast and it dropped off, like it left so quickly. And Dr. Ross says, well, this was an act of nature and we'll never fully understand it, which I do not accept either as a fan of science or as a horror movie viewer. I need to understand it.
Answers. The whole premise of this podcast is I need answers. Like,
and also, like, I feel like scientists would be like, we are going to be working the rest of our lives to understand why this happened. We're not going
to
accept that.
All we need is to find out information about this. This is the only scientific thing to be driving for, especially if you do plant stuff.
Exactly. And the host says, you know, a lot of people think it's the government because it only happened in this geographical area. If it had happened anywhere else in the world, maybe people would believe it, but there's a lot of conspiracy theories, which would absolutely happen. So I get that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the doctor says, I think this is like the first spot of a rash. We've become a threat to this planet. And now, like, the flora, at least, are fighting back the only way it can chemically. Alma, meanwhile, is taking a pregnancy test, and it comes up positive. And she runs outside while Elliot's coming back from the bus stop, and she's so excited to tell him, Allison, would it have made more sense for their central argument to be about whether they should have kids? Yes, but that's not what this movie has. We're not going to give you that story.
You don't need those dots to be connected. They just exist.
Right, yeah. Now they're going to be happy forever, and it's like, did they want kids? Nobody ever brought it up before, but they now have Jess as their child, and they're going to have another child. The end. Or is it? It's not. We cut to Paris. And you see two guys walking through the park, and one says to the other, I should drop my bike off at home before I go to work. And his friend says, oh, can you make it to Nadia's party tonight? And the first guy says, I should drop my bike off at home before I go to work. And they hear a scream, and the friend turns, and he realizes everyone in the park is either dead stopped or is walking slowly backwards. And as he looks, we see the wind blow in. The end! It's happening! No. So, Allison.
There it is.
Lay it on me. What do you think some fatal mistakes were in this film?
Fatal mistakes.
There actually aren't that many.
Exactly, because it's all out of their hands. Like, they didn't, there's nothing they could have done.
It's literally the wind. Like, there's not, like, I think they actually did I mean, they survived, so I guess there's that. Like, they did everything right. They should have dragged the teenagers with them away from the house when they were like, okay, thanks, we'll keep it moving instead of letting them get shot by a crazy person. But
And I guess like
other
maybe,
than that,
not letting Julian leave.
Yeah, I think, but then like they would have been a larger group and that could have been more dangerous.
Absolutely.
So it's like, I think there actually are like almost
is
no fatal mistakes.
This is the movie with the least fatal
the
mistakes.
The least fatal mistakes.
Wow.
From a character perspective, from a production perspective,
right,
so many.
Yeah, absolutely.
Casting, you know, many. But I think character-wise, like they didn't actually, there's not a lot they could have actually done.
Yeah.
And of course, like they did survive. I would not move back to an urban area.
Right, because when you just assume this is going to happen over again. Like, and with the internet now, that, I mean, you don't have to live.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we would hope.
Right. I think I would try and go live, you know, somewhere a little bit more remote than New York City or Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And I would also be dedicating a lot of my life to protecting the environment. Like, I would be someone who's like, I am not buying new things. I am growing my own vegetables and not shipping stuff places. Like, I would start really going and be, like, the greenest of green people and, like, hope that other people were doing the same so that you could prevent this from happening again.
Right. Though I do think in real life we wouldn't do that. And that is also accurate. No, I would just be like,
bring me my things from Amazon one at a time.
Bring me my things, Jeff Bezos.
Bring me my things, Amazon. I need my mini whisk and my string lights and all the dumb shit that I've ordered on Amazon over the years.
So I had a little segment called The Happening Too. It's happening all over again because I feel like it's been long enough. And we also, I mean, climate change is always going to be an issue because we refuse to address it. I was thinking, what would be a good sequel to The Happening? And I had a couple.
Okay, great.
Happening Too, it's Bees Now, Bitch. So Bees, obviously, being the villain. The Happening Three, Whale Be At It Again, which is where the whales and the bees team up to take on humanity.
And then
we'll be at it again in theaters near you. And then finally, The Happening Three, The Trials of Elliot, which is just about a man getting fired for being the worst science teacher of all time.
I definitely think there's a Happening and the Birds crossover to be had. Because I think that, like, as climate change continues to just, you know, ravage the planet that we have caused it to do, birds are going to get involved. I think maybe The Happening Five, The Floor is Lava.
Absolutely. I did like Lava as the is your possible explainer. I wish that's
like, to
lava.
Me, like, to me, like, lava powers the planet. I don't know how or why, but that's like how my brain works.
Nah, you're dead right. I'm not side. I am
a scientist. Inside generating stuff. You know, it's swirling around inside the circle. The globe, the circle.
Yeah, no, that sounds right.
And it makes things, volcanoes are real. Like, that's a real thing, so.
You don't have to say it, tell me twice.
I believe in volcanoes. I'm not a denier. I think those would be some good franchises.
Absolutely. God, for that, we Shyamalan just said, to pursue. That makes me like, there would be happening deniers. There absolutely would be people who are like, the happening didn't happen. That sucks.
Yeah. They'd be those people all just had the flu. And you'd be like, come on, buddy.
Wait, like, it would be the government. Like, I mean they'd be like, you know, whatever. QAnon happening.
Yeah. It
happened on.
I hate it here.
So, Allison, I'd like to ask you, where would you put The Happening on the spooky scale? The spooky scale is, of course, our scale of whether something is spooky, not whether we enjoyed it.
It's good.
Because I would say, while this movie is not good, I do enjoy it.
A spooky scale.
Yes. I think, like, it's very enjoyable. And I think, like, there is the happening being something that, like, you can absolutely not do anything about is a very scary element.
Yes.
But because it's, like, Mark Wahlberg and Zoe Deschanel reacting to it, I'd be pretty taken out of it. But, like, the deaths seem very scary. So, like, I think, like, a six.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I'm going to say a five because I agree. All the deaths are, much like I think every M. Night Shyamalan movie, the deaths are genuinely horrifying. Like, there's a lot of really scary details. But then the, the binding agent of the film is just, it's just not there for this one. Yeah. And I feel, you know, normally, we don't go so hard criticizing movies, but M. Night Shyamalan can take it. He is a legend. He's coming out
with
another movie.
There's so many great hits.
We did The Visit, which, again, like, a low budget, but super fun.
Great.
So I feel like it's like he could take it, and he knows that it almost destroyed his career. So, I mean, it's like we're not, you know, we're not saying anything that a million people haven't said, you know? And again, I paid to see it twice, so I have to take it from me and Allison, so...
There you go. Yeah.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed this. And please, for the love of God, we got to address climate change because I can't be out here running around having people eyeing my lemon drink.
Yeah. Also, like, don't shop on Amazon. Like, please, I don't. So please don't.
Do what you can. Reduce plastic.
Live a green life as much as you can. Do your best. That's all anybody can do.
Yeah.
While you're doing that, send us an email with any thoughts or questions you have for us at ruined@theradiopoint.com. We'll obviously talk about it on the podcast because we do that every week now. So please reach out, subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, tell your friends about the podcast.
And most importantly,
you must.
In the meantime,
we ask you, we beg you
to please
keep it spooky.
Keep it spooky.
Bye.
Bye.
Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder. Recorded and edited by Kat Iosa.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.